This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. We're going to talk some auto racing. We're going to start out talking with Terry Fitzwater about the Talladega 500 coming up over the weekend, coming up on Sunday, and talk about auto racing around the Midwest. But first, we got to tell you, Tiger Woods is dangerously close to missing the cut. He's one shot over, and the cut line is one under par. So he's one over, and it's the field in North Carolina, and so he is almost. We'll probably know shortly whether he will miss the cut or not. So Tiger Woods is dangerously close to missing the cut. Let's go out to talk a little auto racing with Terry Fitzwater. Terry, how you doing?
Doing good, Earl. How are you?
Hey, doing good. And yeah, I wanted to talk to you about the Talladega 500 coming up. And, of course, in auto racing around the Midwest. I know the weather has been fine this year. So has the water auto racing, has it started already? And is it going well around in the Midwest so far?
Well, Earl, I'll give you a qualified yes. The racing has started in the last couple of weeks. It's actually been running down in Ohio and Indiana for the whole month of April. It's been mostly a hit, but a few misses. Last weekend, some tracks opened up here in Michigan, and Friday night was fine, but Saturday night, a lot of tracks canceled because of cold weather. But a track real close to Lansing, Crystal Motor Speedway, just keeps rolling along. They filled the house and had over 100 cars there last Saturday night, even though the temperature never got above 40 degrees. You got to be pretty hardy to go out and endure those kind of temperatures, but everybody's optimistic about today. Supposed to have decent weather tomorrow, and I suspect we're going to see some good crowds. The car counts are up this year, so everybody's optimistic that the worst is over and that the sport is on the uptick.
Well, 100 cars, that's a lot of cars out for auto racing, especially in a smaller venue like this one.
Yeah, you're right, Earl. That's a good point. I tell you what, Ron Flynn, the promoter out of Crystal, for some reason over the years, either through his reputation and the way he treats drivers and fans, I think you could have a tornado going through there, and they'd still have over 110 cars, and they'd have the stands filled. No matter what the conditions, Ron always fills that place. He's the envy of a lot of the promoters in the state of Michigan, that's for sure.
Yes, because, as we've talked about before, drivers just aren't as friendly as they used to be, negotiating and talking with fans and such. It's not like the old days, like we said, back in the 60s, even in the 70s and such. It's changed a lot more. So if he can get the drivers to integrate and to play around more with the fans, that certainly would be a plus.
Yeah, that's right. The short tracks aren't like that. It's once you get to the bigger stages where you find that, the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series nationwide, the drivers are a little bit more tougher to and inaccessible when you look back at the days of Bill Elliott, Richard Petty, Bobby Allison, even Terry Labonte when he was winning in the 70s and early 80s. Those guys would stand around and sign autographs and were real approachable. Now it's a little tougher as the sport has grown. The drivers are a little less accessible and more protective of their time, that's for sure.
Yes, would you say that's like baseball, football, basketball? All those sports have gotten those players used to be a lot closer and more accessible and more amenable to the fans. Whereas now fans don't hardly get a chance to talk with them anymore. But yet, still, we still like the sports. Is auto racing, you think, going that way as well?
I think it's starting. It's a back on the uptick. There was a time, Earl, that we've had many conversations over the years where for open wheel it was definitely going downhill, and NASCAR was on the rise. And then in the last 5 or 6 years, we've talked to you see more empty seats, and you don't see as many people in the sport, and the ratings are down. But I think in the last 6 months to a year, with NASCAR, so finally let the drivers get together and rub a little bit more, because rubbing's racing. a little bit more of that action. You know, you slowly but surely you see a few fans paying more attention, and you see more people coming out to the tracks, and more, you know, ratings starting to go back up again. So I think the economy starting to come back a little bit, and you see that helping, and then you see the number of fans going out to the track and stuff. So I think we're on an upswing. At least I hope so.
Well, how is Talladega doing? As you know, that's one of the biggest races out there. How's that one shaping up so far?
Well, you know, it's one of the great races on, you know, every year. You know, I think it's the fans' favorite. The Talladega race in the spring and the fall always seems to draw attention. It's wicked fast. It's one of the fastest track out there on the circuit. And then you see the big crash every year. So it's always the big one, always seems to happen at Talladega. But Earl, if you look at the statistics for Talladega, you know, five of the last six races down there have been won by less than a tenth of a second. And the last four races, there was the last lap pass to win the race. So that's going to get fans' attention. They're going to pay attention to this race just because that's what racing is supposed to be.
And that's great because, you know, that's one thing we've talked about is getting you know, the fans need to feel a sense that they have ownership in the race. And with that one, it seems like they have that kind of feeling that they own this race.
Yeah, and it's a great track. It's, you know, got the high banks, and it's one of the old-time southern tracks. And it's got a lot of history there. You know, Dale Earnhardt Sr., you know, he won there 9 times. Junior's won there 5 times. It's just a track with great history. And there always seems to be, you know, a big crash near the end when the drivers start. They try and be cautious at the beginning. But you get those last 50 laps at Talladega, everybody wants that win under their belt. And so they start doing things that they don't do in the first 150 laps, and it leads to a wild finish. And there's always, with that draft that they have down there, they always have those last lap passes, and they're real, real close. So it's an exciting race to watch, and if the weather cooperates, it's going to be a great race this weekend.
Oh, that would be good. I mean, that's what the fans are hoping for. Now, Terry, we were talking a little bit while ago. Now, how is your, you know, with all these, the fans maybe not being able to interact with the race, with the auto racers and with the drivers, how is that helping? Is that helping your magazine at all? Do more people go to look and getting more information because they don't have such access to the drivers?
Well, you know, Earl, that's a great question. I'm seeing more and more people. I'm an old guy, so you know, mm-hmm. Born and raised in newspapers, I guess. But you know, with the advent of the internet and social media, you have to have different forms for people to get involved in, you know, with the drivers and stuff like that. So I created a webpage, and I've created a Facebook page, and, you know, you keep updating that, and people follow that. It's amazing. We put a thing on there earlier about, you know, what the qualifying speeds were down at for the ARCA race there today, and that Tony Stewart may actually be flying out of Talladega to race in the World of Outlaw thing at Eldora, and all of a sudden it goes viral. So fans still want to pay attention, but what I see them doing, they're looking for more and more sources of information where they don't have to pay. But number two, they're starting to follow some of the drivers. And I think the most famous thing happened was during the Daytona 500 this year when Brad Keselowski from Michigan, you know, was up there tweeting inside the car when the car was stopped during that caution when the track dryer caught on fire, and then he went from, you know, he picked up like 75,000 followers on Twitter just because he was tweeting in the car. And, you know, normally NASCAR would find guys like that, but they thought it was great because it brought fans closer to the driving experience. So for both me as a auto racing publication owner and for the drivers, there's a new way of getting that information and getting that feel. Unfortunately, I like the up close and personal where, hey, I'm shaking the driver's hand, getting his autograph versus, hey, you know, on my computer, the tweet showing up or it's on Facebook.
Yes, and so many of us, especially us old school folks.
Yeah, that's better. I like old school better than old guy.
Yeah, we're part of that old school group, and so yeah, we love the up close and personal. That's always a little bit better for us, or we like to think it's better. I know I went out and met Jim Abbott the other day. It was nice meeting him.
Yeah,
I went to his book signing. He is a great guy. But it was nice meeting him and having him sign my book. And, you don't get a chance to do that too often. So I figure I better take advantage of it.
You know, and that's the one thing, because, you know, when it's to the great thrills, I have on display at my house, one year it was when they were tire testing before they first did the first Brickyard 400 the year before. And I'm walking along and there's Richard Petty. And so you go up and you could just say, hey, King, can I have your autograph? And he signed my press badge and stuff like that. And he said, how you doing? So then we're having a conversation, and I was just honored and thrilled to be able to meet the guy. And then he asked me how I'm doing. Those are the kind of experiences you remember, you relate to, and now you go to the track, and it's like, just there's so many people trying to get their autographs, so many people trying to get their attention. You know, part of me says as a person, you look at the identity of the person, God, that's got to be tough on them every day. Yeah. On the other hand, hey, you're making millions. That's what grew the sport. You got to give something back. So there is a fine line there. And I don't think a lot of the guys haven't really come to it. But you'll still see, Earl, you go to MIS this summer when they're ready to qualify, you'll still see four or five guys, some of them are the old school guys, where they'll walk up and down pit road. They'll still sign autographs before they go out and qualify. Where the younger guys, you'll see them, and they'll just go sit on the pit wall, and they won't sign anything.
Yeah, and that's a shame for a lot of people that they really wouldn't like to see that. Hopefully, more drivers, like you say, they'll get out there and get involved with the crowd, because that's what built the sport. That's what made it such a popular sport, because the people felt they could come up and just talk to the racers, and they could have a casual conversation with them.
Yep, I think Earl. We as fans pay attention to the race dates. I mean, that's why we're fans, because of the racing. And I think what I see some of the guys doing now, on race day, that's their job. So they're more focused on qualifying, because the competition is so level that they don't pay as much attention to the marketing or public relations side of the business as they should. There's things that they have to do, but people are paying for them to do it that weekend. What I see a lot of the guys doing now, like the Jeff Gordons and the Tony Stewarts, they have their charity. So what they'll do off the track, they'll go out, away from a race venue. They'll go off and sign autographs and have moments where they're doing charity work. And they're very approachable, very accessible. It's almost like you're looking at two different personalities when they're waiting for it. But they set that time up for their PR and marketing away from the track when they're not concentrating on qualifying or getting the car set up. But I don't think the average fan looks at it that way. They're there at the track to see him race, and they want their access to him then. Or the drivers are trying to maybe say, hey, we'll make ourselves available. It just may not be on a race weekend, because that's where we're working.
Okay. Hey, before we let you go, tell us how someone wants to register and get one of your magazines. How can they go about it?
Well, there's a couple ways, Earl. They can call me at 517-930-1368. That's area code 517-930-1368. That's where they can call and subscribe. They can go to www.midwestracingscene.com, and there's a place you can now you get an online subscription or have a paper delivered to your house, so they can go sign up there through PayPal. Or they can come to my office here in Lansing at Interweb Media Group. And, I'm here 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. They come on in, and I'll talk to them, and we'll get them signed up right here.
Okay. Hey, Terry, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we'll be talking more, more big races. We'll be talking more as the summer goes along here.
Okay, look forward to it, Earl. And just remember, we're only a month away from MIS, and so we'll have to be talking soon.
Okie dokie.
Indy 500 is only 3 weeks away.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. All right, Earl.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Bye now.
We'll talk to you later. Yep. Bye-bye. And that's Terry Fitzwater from Midwest Racing Scene Magazine. That's MidwestRacingScene.com if you want to subscribe to his magazine. The time now, 20 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
The public wants more action taken about climate change. I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for a new survey that shows global warming and clean energy should be high priorities. Plus, Mayim Bialik on her role as the Big Bang Theory's Amy Farrah Fowler, and an experimental vaccine to treat cocaine overdose. It's all on Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Science Friday on Talk of the Nation, coming up here at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good to have you with us today. I'm Scott Pohl with the weather forecast. It'll be in the low 70s for a high today, mostly cloudy and maybe some rain and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy tonight, the low in the low 50s. It'll stay mostly cloudy tomorrow, the high 69, partly sunny and a high of 65 Sunday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-952-7870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. We're going to turn our attention to baseball right now, talk some college and professional baseball with Chris Solari from the Lansing State Journal. So, Chris, how you doing, my man?
Oh, I'm doing great today, Earl. How about you?
Doing great. It's a pleasure to talk with you, talk a little baseball. We've seen a lot of things happen in the sport of baseball, but one of the most disturbing things happened, of course, was Delmon Young, who's off of his suspension today. How do you think the fans are going to greet him when he gets to the stadium today, this evening?
Boy, that's going to be an interesting scene, I bet. I don't think he's going to be too warmly received. He obviously has been struggling. You know, he has been struggling at the plate lately before the whole incident in New York. And now he put a distraction on the team that really this team at this time did not need. So it'll be interesting to see how the fans, I just don't see them, you know, giving him a wide cheer. And, you know, I don't know what the proper response should be. Should it be ambivalence towards him? Should it be booing? I am a little bit surprised that the Tigers are sticking with him right now, mostly because, I mean, this is a serious matter that is a potential felony hate crime, and I'm sure they're going to wait and let the legal process play out, and we'll see, I guess, if this is just a temporary situation for him to still be in the lineup and with the Tigers, or if they're planning to just keep him and have his back for the rest of the season.
Yes, and I'm wondering, tonight, will Jim Leland let him play, or will he take a couple of days? I heard Jim say earlier that, you know, he's gonna have some work to do so he can get back into shape or get ready to play. So I'm just wondering, is he gonna maybe take the bull by the horns and give him a shot to play tonight, or will he wait a day or two?
I think he waits a day or two. It's gonna be enough of a circus with him rejoining the team, you know, then to pile that on top of the actuality of playing baseball and keeping them focused and mindset. I mean, I just don't know if any good can come of it from the Tigers' standpoint to have him in the lineup and in left field. Maybe he gets a pinch hit at some point. Maybe not. You know, it'll be interesting to see. I'm also not surprised that they sent Brad Eldridge down, and I was really just kind of shaking my head when I heard that. We heard so many fans thinking that Brad Eldridge was going to be the answer for this offense because, you know, there's a large enough sample size with Brad Eldridge in Pittsburgh and in Colorado to know that Brad Eldridge is a 4A player. He's 31 years old and had a couple stints in the majors and never hit, I believe. I think he was like a 228 or 230 lifetime hitter. So, I mean, you know, you can't expect a guy that's kicked around the minors like that to be the savior of your offense. You see, he's not a Delmon Young producer. So, I mean, the Tigers are probably also trying to figure that out in terms of whether or not they have someone that could replace Delmon Young's production. Because, I mean, that's the thing that the sabermetricians love right now is value over replacement player. And not that Delmon Young is far and away better, but he's got a history of being able to produce at a level above an average major leaguer. So.
Yeah, he's been able to do that, even though, as we know, he hasn't been the greatest fielder, ever playing ball, but has been able to hit somewhat. And that's the thing, Chris, you know, when we look at baseball, I know when I look at it, it's always hard for me to say, if they get this one guy, that'll help turn it around. Usually it takes, three or four guys to start hitting it. When everybody goes in a slump, even if that one guy breaks out, you know, it takes more than that usually, doesn't it?
It really does. And I think that, you know, for all the number crunchers and analytics that you want to do in terms of hitting and in terms of production, in terms of trends in hitting. And you can throw any numbers out there that you want, but when it comes down to it, there has to be a mental comfortability when you step into the batter's box. There has to be an idea and an approach to what you're going to do, to where you want to pitch, and it has to be a comfort level. And, I mean, that's not something that numbers can gauge. That's only that's stuff comes and goes, and that's what baseball is. I mean, that's why it can be an up and it can be a down, and people can't predict the trend. But you're right, though. If one guy gets locked in, and I don't think that there's really any kind of numbers you can do to crunch this, but every dugout talks about hitting being contagious, and that's so true. I mean, it really is. Maybe one guy is in a terrible slump and comes to the park one day and just says, "You know what? I'm done with this. I can't deal with this anymore. Here we go. I'm just gonna, to simplify my approach and take a smaller swing and get a hit." That little adjustment could change like the entire lineup. It's so weird to think about it in that term, because unlike so many other sports, so much of it is individual versus individual. I guess shooting slumps you can see for basketball players, but the percentages for shooting slumps or for shooting in basketball really doesn't compare to the approach it's a repetitive motion, but it starts with the person who produces, whereas hitting starts with the pitcher and ends with the guy who has to produce. So,
yes, I mean, I'm still waiting. We're all still waiting, and maybe the California Angels, the Los Angeles Angels, can start hitting, and maybe they can drag Albert Pujols along. If they can start hitting, because he hasn't done anything, and he's just in a serious, serious, terrible slump at the start of the season as far as getting a home run. He's starting to hit and get a few singles and such, but he needs to do a lot better for the money that they're paying him. And as other people would say, and I think I'm saying the same thing, is that, when you get that big, big contract, and so many guys, when you get a contract like that, you feel that you've got to live up to it. And you put extra pressure on yourself just by feeling you've got to live up to this contract.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about that. I mean, there's two camps that sometimes I think when it comes to that. There are the guys that feel that they have to live up to it and press, and then there are the other guys who feel, "I've made it. It's done."
Yes.
It's interesting when you look at the Pujols situation. I mean, as soon as he gets to Los Angeles or to Anaheim or wherever they want to call themselves, the first thing you hear is the billboard controversy where the Angels put up the El Hombre signs. He's like, "I don't want to be considered the man."
Yeah.
Well, I don't think anyone's really talking about that right now. He's not producing like the man. So you have to kind of take that into account. And the thing that really baffles me about that is sometimes you'll see guys when they come out of camp, they'll struggle. Doesn't matter who it can hit anybody at any time. But usually it's a climate factor, and it's not that bad for Los Angeles here. I mean, I know they've been on the road here and there, but it'll be interesting to see this month. I try not to take 1 month as being gospel in terms of how a player's season's going to go. But, once you start getting into May, then you start thinking, okay, this is starting to go from just being a blip on the radar to being a trend. And, there's how many guys that hit home runs that you just, say, "Boy, he hit a home run before Albert Pujols."
Yeah.
I mean, Ramon Santiago hit home runs before him.
Uh-huh. Even Brandon Inch had one.
It baffles the mind sometimes how the game of baseball works, and that's why it's so glorious a game, because it can be all over the map, for a full summer.
Yep.
See things that you never expect, and sometimes you'll see things that you did expect just completely blow up.
Well, I know I had a chance to listen to you and many of your fellow colleagues as you had some great arguments while we were over there in the football building, arguing about Brandon Inge and some of the other baseball things that are going on. And I've never been a pro or against Inge, but I just thought, you know, I knew he can field and he's a good fielder, and I thought he could hold his glove. You know, he can hold his position just because he's a great fielder. And we've seen a lot of guys in the majors over the years who are good fielders and can hit. But it just seemed like no one wanted to give Inge a chance.
Well, you know, the interesting thing with Brandon Inge is that, I mean, when Sal Fasano was here a couple years ago managing the Lugnuts, he told me that Brandon Inge is the best athlete he's ever seen in baseball. And that says something. I mean, Fasano kicked around some pretty good teams over the years. And to say that about Brandon Inge is pretty astounding. So, I mean, you can understand from that perspective why he lasted as long as he did with the Tigers.
Sure.
And, I mean, when you think about it, how many different positions? Left field, catcher, third base. I mean, you know, that says something. But, and it wasn't so much an argument for me. I'm kind of in your camp. I mean, I don't really have a dog in this fight when it comes to dealing with Brandon Inge. But I felt you had to give him a little bit of time because you're paying him so much money. And you had to see there's such a void at second base, top to bottom. I mean, there's not one player that's been playing second base for them where I can sit back and say, okay, this is the guy that's going to solidify this position. There's a whole lot of role players in there. So, you know, you had to give Brandon a chance to do it. I'm surprised the Tigers did cut bait as quick as they did, but I think they felt they saw enough of what they needed to see. And, you know, he gave it a try, and they gave it a try. And he's a commodity at third base for his defense. So, I mean, you know, I think everybody kind of wishes him well in Oakland. I would hope. I would hope they do. I mean, the guy. What did the guy do wrong for the Tigers and for the city of Detroit? Nothing.
Yeah.
But there's never been as polarizing a baseball player as I can remember in the city.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, either you loved him or you hated him. There wasn't much room in between, was there?
Yeah, guys like you and me are few and far between. I mean, there's either you're either in the I love Brandon Inge camp and he's the best third baseman ever and his defense saves us everything, or the camp where his hitting is so anemic that he's destroying our lineup and we should be so much better.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing to see that.
You don't see that much in baseball. That really doesn't happen that often, does it?
No, you're right.
Well, let's talk a little bit about college baseball. Michigan State's, still is trying to get up into Purdue looks like they're going to win the Big Ten. But the Michigan State's doing well, but, boy, that Purdue is really having a great, great year, aren't they?
Yeah, Purdue's got a deep roster of guys back from last year. And, I mean, they made it to the tournament last year down in Columbus, the Big Ten tournament, I should say. And, you know, they've got the pitching and they've got the hitting right now. And they're both in sync and they're veterans. That's, I mean, you know, how many times do you see that in college baseball that veterans lead the team deep in the conference and in the tournament? I mean, that's a regular thing. I mean, you know, Michigan State obviously lost some pretty key players last year in terms of Jeff Holm, who's at the West Michigan Whitecaps now, and Brandon Eckerly, Kurt Wunderlich. I mean, those are three right there. You're talking about the Big Ten pitcher of the year and, you know, a couple first-team Big Ten players there. That's a lot of firepower to lose. But I think what you're seeing as the season goes along is the young guys that they've got, there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of talent in that freshman class. And as they get comfortable, this team's starting to pick up a little bit of steam. And, you know, a guy like David Garner, who won Pitcher of the Week last week in the Big Ten, and he's a key for this team down the stretch here because he's got such a live arm. And it's one of those things that getting that third starter can help solidify everything you do in a weekend in the Big Ten. I mean, that's the difference between losing a series and winning a series sometimes.
And this team hasn't, you know, as last year's team was really, you know, they hit regularly. This team has been a little bit more skittish as far as the hitting goes along.
That's a good way to describe it. I mean, it's streaky hitting. I mean, and, you know, you do see that more with younger players that are in the lineup. You know, a guy like Ryan Jones, however, is still hitting, you know, in the high 300-400s. Older players like Josh Kerr, I mean, they're the ones that are producing. And, you know, you look at some of the middle of the order guys that are young. I mean, Ryan Krill is a freshman who really is starting to come into his own as a hitter. But, you know, he's still a freshman. And you can't put the bulk of your offense on a freshman, on a guy like Prill or Blaise Salter. I mean, they've got to be complementary players rather than the total leaders.
Yes, and the thing with Michigan State is, you know, a lot of people thought they would almost automatically would win it again this year because they had so many players coming back, even though we probably didn't look that as close as we should have as Purdue or some of the other teams that have enough players coming back, too, that are giving Michigan State a very, very good fight this year.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, you look at that. There are two teams tied at 9-6, I believe, right behind Purdue for second. And then there's four teams tied at 8-7. So it's similar to the way last year was. It's just that instead of looking down on the standings, Michigan State's now kind of in that muddled mess. I mean, this weekend, you know, I mean, they're tied with Illinois right now. So, I mean, going to take two out of three from the Illini would be big. A sweep would be amazing for Michigan State right now because, let's face it, I mean, the key is to get the seeding. And, you know, it's hard to realize that Michigan State last year, even though they clinched the Big Ten title first, lost to Illinois. You know, Illinois got the number one overall seed in that tournament because they ended up tied at the end of the year.
Yeah, so true, and those things do happen, and since they only let six teams in, that makes it even tougher since those top six get in. And so, you know, we'll see what happens with Michigan State this year because, you know, I know there's still a glut following Purdue, so they've got a, you know, it looks like Purdue almost got our home free. They got the next 2 weeks. They've got nine conference games. Then they'll come back for a conference match at the end. But it's always the thing that I've noticed about baseball, even college or professional baseball, it's hard to sweep. You know, it's hard to win that three in a row or four in a row or, you know, two in a row sometimes. It's hard. But when you have to talk about sweeping a team, you know, I don't think people realize how tough it is to sweep a team over a weekend, over a three or four game stretch.
Yeah, especially at the college level when you're only throwing these guys, you know, that's the only time that your starters are throwing is, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know, midweek games, you're more or less getting different players, different pitchers, some work. So, I mean, it does make that a little more difficult to get a sweep in that situation. And, I mean, you know, look at last year. I mean, what decided the Big Ten championship and number one overall seed for Michigan State was – by losing one or losing two or three at Illinois. That's how Illinois got the number one overall seed. So, you know, I mean, the margin for error at college baseball can be sometimes pretty small, especially in the Big Ten where everybody is kind of, you know, there's about five or six teams right now that are more or less in the same boat historically. And, you know, Michigan State's trying to crawl back into that, you know, and into that upper echelon of the Big Ten. It's going to be interesting to see if they can do it and get, you know, the good thing for them would be to get the number two seed in Columbus. And, you know, but first you got to get to Columbus. That's the biggest thing.
Yes. Well, before I let you go, Chris, let's talk about the Tigers. I mean, what has befound you or what has surprised you most about the first month of the season and how the Tigers are doing?
Well, I think that, you know, Prince Fielder's lack of power is a little surprising, but, you know, between switching leagues and facing new pitchers and kind of getting a little bit of an adjustment period there I guess I can understand that to a point. Boy, the Delman Young situation was, you know, that's probably the biggest surprise, you know, off the field. I think probably the biggest surprise and most disappointment are how Rick Porcello and Max Scherzer are pitching at the back end of the rotation, in all honesty, because you can't sit there and have Justin Verlander carry you all the time. You need those two guys to pitch like veterans. And the other thing I think is how well Drew Smyly has adjusted. I mean, you heard good things about him in camp. You heard about good things about him towards the end of last year that he might make a push to get in there. But he is as composed a youngster on the mound that you'll find. And I think that's huge. That's probably kept them from being worse than they are with how the pitching has been.
So true. Hey, Chris, I want to thank you for joining me. Always a pleasure talking with you every day, my friend. And we'll talk again sometime. We'll talk soon, a little baseball or something else that may come across our way. But we'll keep in touch with you, Chris.
Sounds great, Earl. Take care of yourself.
Okay, thank you, buddy. Talk to you later. Bye-bye. And that's Chris Solari from the Lansing State Journal talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. And now we're going to talk about one of my favorite sports, a little hockey, especially the Stanley Cup playoffs with our good friend Scott Moore, the voice of Michigan State hockey. We'll turn our attention to hockey with Scott Moore. You're listening to stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Does a little known element have the power to transform our energy landscape? I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for a look at thorium and why some are calling it a super fuel. Plus, from music to documents to your office apps, is it time to move to the cloud? It's all on Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Talk of the Nation. It's coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
We have a mostly cloudy forecast with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. The high today in the low 70s. We'll have a low of 51 tonight with mostly cloudy skies, and it'll stay mostly cloudy for Saturday, the high tomorrow 69. Partly sunny on Sunday, the high 65. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, now let's turn our attention and talk a little hockey with our good friend Scott Moore. Scott, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing great today, Earl. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good because these Stanley Cup playoffs, just another year. I hate that the Wings are out, but hey, Nashville's representing themselves pretty well. They're trailing 2-1 to Phoenix right now. The Kings have a 3-0 lead over St. Louis. But the other two, New Jersey Devils 2-1 lead over Philadelphia, and the Washington Caps 2-1 lead over the Rangers. So we've got some very interesting playoffs in the Stanley Cup playoffs, don't we?
Got some close series and some close games. How about all the overtime games?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. This is, there's some parity in the NHL, that's for sure.
Yes, it is. That's the only sport I can say that when you look at all the sports, it's the only one where if you get it, all you got to do is get in the playoffs. It doesn't matter whether you're an 8 seed or a 7 seed. You can win it. You just got to get in the playoffs.
Hey, just talk to the Kings about that. These guys are looking like they're going to make it all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. They were the 8 seed in the West.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
It is. It's just incredible when you look at hockey. And, you know, I looked at the NBA playoffs last night and how they're doing, and everything is just basically going true to form, as it always does in the NBA. It takes – in the NBA, might makes right, and you don't – very rarely do you have upsets in the NBA. But in hockey, you always have some upsets.
Well, you know, anytime that you get a chance to put somebody right in front of where you have to score – and it's not that much bigger than the person himself. I mean, you know, you can ride a hot goaltender, and that's exactly what LA's been doing. Jonathan Quick has just been outstanding in goal for the Kings this year. Pekka Rinne did a great job against the Red Wings, and, you know, he hasn't been bad in the second round, and still they're down 2-1.
Yes, and they've had all close games. It's just amazing how close these games are, these series are. Hopefully some of our fans are out there are watching, watching the playoffs, because that's really, for me, it's the only time of the season I get in to watch hockey every day. I mean, as far as the regular season, I can give a care less. Once the hockey, the playoffs start, I'm there.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people that do that, and I can understand that, because during the regular season, there's things going on. There's so many options. You get to the playoffs, and now all of a sudden, certainly it's not one and done, but one game can turn a series, and there's a little bit more riding on it. So you get a lot of people that do it that way.
Yes, and I guess that's fun. A lot of people, like you say, a lot of people like it. A lot of people follow it. That's the way they follow it. But hockey is such an exciting game, and it's certainly it's certainly well worth people's time just to start following, just to get into it. You probably should get into it a little bit in the regular season, just to give you an idea of what's going on in the playoffs. Now, when you look at the playoffs, when you look at each matchup here, how do you see them ending? You got the Washington up 2-1. You got the The Devil is up 2-1. So how do you see those matches going the rest of the way?
Well, you look at the way that they finished in the regular season, and you have to take some of that into account. Mm-hmm. Now, with the Kings and the Blues, you know, granted, this is a matchup between the number 2 seed in St. Louis, the number 8 seed in L.A., but L.A. is already up 3-0.
Yeah.
So you figure, okay, the Kings have the inside track at the very least. I think with the way that the Phoenix-Nashville series has gone, with the home team winning each of those games, this one could go a while. Interesting little tidbit today, you know, Nashville sat their leading scorer and their leading goal scorer in Game 3. And now Barry Trotz, their head coach, has announced that those two are not going to dress tonight for Game 4 either because they won 2-0 for no other reason. He's taking the guy who has the most points in the playoffs and the most goals in the playoffs and leaving him on the bench because they won the last game. So that's a little interesting. So we'll see what happens in Nashville this evening in that game. The two teams in the Eastern, the two series rather in the Eastern Conference, both 2-1 series, they could go either way. I like what Philadelphia has done this season. I think that series is really close and could go either way. You have to like what Marty Brodeur's been doing for the New Jersey Devils, especially if you're a little elevated in age like you and I, Earl. I mean, he's representing for the 35-plus crowd, that's for sure.
Okay, that's good.
And the Rangers being the top seed in the East, you got to figure that they'll figure out a way to get past Washington, but Washington did such a good job in their first-round series. Yeah, these could go either way, but I think you're looking probably at L.A. versus, I'm going to say Nashville, just because they had a little bit of an edge coming out of the Central in the Western Final, and I'm going to say the Rangers versus the Flyers in the East.
Yeah, Nashville, they've got a lot of size, and that's a big unit. They've got big goalie, big small forwards. That's a team that has a lot of not only size, but they've got a lot of athletic ability as well.
And just the way that they handled a team like Detroit, which was maybe not a fantastic team in the regular season, but still got the job done night in and night out. You got to figure that gives them something. They won at home. I think they're going to get this thing turned back around. Phoenix is kind of in uncharted territory. Well, for that matter, Nashville is as well. So who knows what's going to happen there? I just got a gut feeling that we're going to see Nashville in the West Finals.
Yes, well, I got to mention to you, as you know, it looks like you're not going to have a new hockey arena to broadcast from. It looks like it's going to be the good old Munn Arena as it has been, which isn't bad. It's worked for a lot of years, and it looks like they're going to refurbish that.
As exciting as it would be to get a new arena, Earl, I have said for years that Munn Arena is kind of like the Dick Clark of hockey arenas. It mm-hmm. never has looked its age. Mm-hmm. You tell somebody that building opened up in the mid-70s when you're standing around inside, and they go, what? No, that's not possible. So, it is in very good shape from a fan's point of view. And I got to give Tom Campbell and his crew over at Munn Ice Arena great props for keeping that place looking so great inside. Where it's a little bit deficient is the places where the fans can't see.
Yeah.
Underneath, down the locker areas, especially the visiting locker area, the coach's office suite is nice, but could be better. And when you look at the arms race around certainly the Big Ten, which is going to be relevant for Michigan State year after next, something has to be done there in order to maintain appearances to recruit top athletes. So I think from what I've heard of the plans for renovation of Munn, it's going to be just fine. I know for a fact that Mark Hollis, Greg Iani, and the crew at the athletic department is going to do things up first class as far as the changes that are made over at Munn Ice Arena, and it's going to be a nice place to play, no matter whether it's
the existing arena or whether they do find a donor and can build a brand new place.
Well, you know, I know one thing. You and I have seen a lot of changes in there. I mean, they didn't have suites in there or anything, or the other section that they have that the donors can sit in and stuff. So there's been a lot of changes already over the years that you and I have been able to witness, and you know, and now we're going to see even more changes.
Yeah, we're going to see more changes. Yeah, from what I've heard, they're going to create a main front entrance.
Okay.
For the building, and I believe that's going to be on the south side. Towards Munn Field,
okay.
so there'll be a main entrance made on that mm-hmm. south side. That's going to be the front door of the building. And the building really doesn't have a front door right now, and so that will be an addition to the outside of the building, similar to what they did with basketball with the Berkowitz building. And that'll be where the new offices and weight rooms and all of the amenities that they're going to put in for alumni athletes and current athletes and all that are all going to go in there, and so that'll free up the existing space down underneath to renovate that area and dress that up quite a bit. So I'll guarantee it's going to be one of the nicest places in the league to play when everything is said and done. And then as far as the fans go, I know one of the things that the fans have talked about is the fact that the aisles don't have handrails in them for going down the stairs.
Right.
And they will address that because that's a federal law now. Anytime, you know, everything was grandfathered in because the arena was built before the Americans with Disabilities Act. But once you start renovation, now you have to bring everything up to code for the ADA, and so that will take place. So they'll have to widen some of the aisles. You'll lose a little bit of seating, but they'll take care of things, and it'll be just fine.
Yes, and of course they've got the new service. They're going to have to put that in, and we know that's part of the federal regulations.
Well, that's part of the thing that started the whole thing off is that they've got to replace the old refrigerant system because it's going to be illegal to use that kind of refrigerant. I believe in 2 or 3 years. So I think they're thinking that happens maybe even this summer, where they're going to have to dig up the floor and replace the refrigerant system. And put the new stuff in, that was why they needed to make a decision when they make a decision as to whether they're going to build and wait 3 years or whether they're going to renovate and do it now.
Okay. So that's something that we'll be looking for. But a lot of changes in Munn Arena, which is for the better, and it's going to make it even better for the fans, I think. Like you say, probably even better sight lines, wouldn't you think, that they'll have better sight lines for the fans?
It'll be interesting to see what they do as far as fan seating, because there's been discussions as to, you know, are they going to go to chair backs all the way around? Are they going to leave bleachers on the upper portion and keep the chairs down low? Are they going to put maybe bleachers that have backs on them, kind of like the bleachers that they have down at Cooley Law School Stadium downtown? It'll be interesting to see what decisions they make along those lines. Being a person of size as I am, I hope that if they go with chair backs, that they go with wide enough chair backs for people like myself. Although I've got a pretty good seat for the game.
Yeah, you have a pretty good seat already. I don't know if they need to better your seat anymore, since you've already got one of the better
seats. And the people around me know that I don't use my seat very much.
Yeah, you sort of stand up a little bit.
That's just one of my little peccadilloes. I like to stand and get rid of my nervous energy that way.
Well, Scott, it's always a pleasure talking with you. I know you're going to be back on Tuesday and Wednesday for me next week, so you have a chance to talk more with the fans a couple of days next week. So
And I've been thinking about who to bring in to help me pass the time. So we'll come up with some guests for that time, and you enjoy your time off, and I'll try to sit in the seat and take care of things for you.
Okie dokie.
All right.
Hey, thanks a lot, Scott.
All right, we'll talk to you, Earl.
Okay, talk to you later, buddy. Yep, bye-bye. And that's Scott Moore, the voice of Michigan State Hockey, right here on AM 870. We got to tell you, the Kentucky Derby comes up Saturday, one of the great horse races of in all of America, the first one of the Triple Crown. And we'll see that on tomorrow afternoon. And then, of course, you have the Cinco de Mayo, a great fight coming up. It should be a very good fight between my man Miguel Cotto and Floyd Mayweather. That should be an excellent fight between those two. So you've got good fights coming up this weekend. You've got a lot of hockey, a lot of basketball, and of course you've got the Kentucky Derby. So a lot going on this weekend in the Mid-Michigan area. So just check out any of those games. And we also have a little bit of shocking news. Aaron, I think you found out that it looks like Tiger Woods didn't make the cut in North Carolina, did he?
No. Unless the projected cut was 1 under par and he finished 1 over par. So unless there's a bunch of people that just suddenly drop from 1 under par and the projected cut somehow goes to 1 over par, he will not make the cut, which, he's up and down so much. I don't know where he's at.
Yeah, it's quite a surprise. I mean, a lot of us thought he would make the cut. I mean, it's not a major tournament or anything. They've got some good players, people in there. But like you say, he's been up and down so much these last years. It's really hard to figure out where is Tiger at with his golf now. He's made so many changes. You know, he definitely doesn't look like the Tiger that he used to look, 10 years or so ago. And I guess we shouldn't even expect him to be the Tiger Woods of 10 years or so ago. I guess we shouldn't even expect that kind of, happening. But, he's still considered one of the world's best, but he's just struggling still right now.
Yeah, you're right. He's made so many changes in so many areas. Obviously, when a golfer changes his swing, I think he's changed it several times. And why he ever changed it in the first place is beyond me. That one's still a head scratcher. I think he was just trying to perfect himself, but then it actually hurt him in the end. I thought he was kind of back on track, but he obviously proved me wrong that he's not. So
I heard one of the things why he had to change his swing so much, because he had all those knee injuries early and he had to change his swing to take that pressure off his knees.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That is true. But, unfortunately, maybe that's still bothering him and he's trying to figure out a way where it doesn't hurt his knees. And, obviously he lost his caddy. He's on a new caddy. And, I think he's changed swing coaches a couple times or something too. So, he's been through a lot. I hope he just stays on a certain groove and he gets into a groove, gets back into a routine. The golf world needs him. He's still considered one of the best. I hope, hopefully he comes back and gets everything back together.
Yes, and I'm hoping also we have a good fight between Miguel Cotto and Floyd Mayweather. Floyd's a little smaller. He's quicker. He's definitely quicker than Miguel Cotto. So I expect he'll win. He'll win a decision. I'd be surprised if he knocks him out. He's always talking that knockout, but I'd be surprised if he knocked out Miguel Cotto. I expect him to win a hands down decision over Cotto coming up this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not too much into the boxing, so I'll just trust your word on that. Obviously, Mayweather, I'm aware of him, I'm just going to go with my gut and say he wins that one.
It'll be in the round. I always watch the Kentucky Derby. Like I say, I don't watch the 2 hours before the race comes up. I just wait till the race. It usually starts around 5:30 or so, somewhere in there. I'll watch those 2 minutes, but all that junk they have before it, I don't watch any of that stuff.
Yeah, I don't either, and I do watch the race. It's an exciting race.
It is.
It's like one of the. It's so thrilling, even though I don't watch the sport any other time, really. But
me neither.
But it is so, for whatever reason, it's really exciting.
It is. Hey, we want to thank you all for listening and thank you all for calling. And we invite you to come back and join us on Monday here on Sports Talk 870. Join me and Tim Stout on Sunday on the Sunday Stout on Sports at 11 o'clock on WILX-TV. And we'll see you on Monday right here on AM 870 WKAR. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never listened to us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. Have yourself a very safe and a pleasant evening. We'll see you Monday on WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.